Harris and Ale.
Thank you. Well, good evening and welcome to my talk. I want to start with saying something about LR and QR, but in fact what I'm sharing with you tonight is material I learned about 18 months ago, and I'm very excited about it. I hope you will be too. So, there's great excitement about QR recently in the last year or two because the discoverer of this algorithm, J.J. Francis, was run to earth at last. And instead of being a hidden name, we actually saw the man who invented the QR algorithm. But actually, intellectually, it's really the LR algorithm that counts, because there we had, for the first time in 1957-58, the idea that factoring a matrix and multiplying the factors in reverse order could actually help. Crazy thing to do, and if you look at any of the older books on finding eigenvalues and eigenvectors, there's not a breath of this. So I think collectively in the matrix calculation community, we were all sort of proud of that. Here was something that wasn't discovered by Gauss or Newton or Adams or any of the astronomers. It was genuinely new. And the seminal idea came from Rutishauser in LR at that date. Well, of course, it wasn't backward stable, and it didn't really take very long before people found a backward stable variant with a QR algorithm. And by gosh, at the turn of the century, in 2000, these institutes published an issue with the 10 top algorithms of the century, and by God, the QR algorithm made it into that set. So we can think that it's, we can feel very pleased with ourselves vicariously. Well, I was talking about this at a seminar in Berkeley, and one of my colleagues in the math department, Alberto Grunbaum, listened to me and he said, you know, Beresford, these ideas were known in the PDE community long before. And so thanks to Grunbaum, he pointed me towards some old works, and I'm going to share that with you. So we're going to start with second order linear differential equations, variable coefficients, in what today is called the Schrödinger form, which means we get rid of the first order, the first derivatives. So it's minus d squared plus potential. We go back to 1882. It's a long time ago, and to the Darboux transform. And what Darboux said is, give me a potential, and I'll give you back a new one. How do you form it? You pick any function in the kernel of L. There's a big choice, whereas what you get depends on that choice. Doesn't matter. Pick anything, take its logarithmic derivative, phi prime over phi, and you can say it in two ways, but the new potential is minus V plus twice the logarithmic derivative squared. And there it is. So that's the Darboux transform. And in fact, I'll give you an example to make it more concrete. Let's start with zero. So the span of the linear functions, one and x of the kernel, and I'm going to choose something in the kernel in that general form, c of x minus t, or I have a pointer, I can use it. Well, too bad. And then the v1, the Darboux transform,
pointing under the roof.
Anyway, so v1, the Darboux transform, you follow the formula, and you get 1 times 2. Some ignoramus has read that as 1.2. It's 1 times 2. When I was young, multiplication was represented by a dot. And rather deliberately, I'm choosing t as my free parameter. You'll see why on the next slide. Then we continue. We choose a function in the kernel of L1. Notice the span, the second power, and the negative first power, choose Phi 1, apply the formula, and we get something that doesn't look very different. 2 times 3 over x minus t squared. But of course that makes a big difference in it. You can go on forever. So I've taken the simplest possible example, and there's an amazing fact. I'm just name dropping now. But the amazing fact is that if you consider all the possible functions you get from the potentials, taking all possible choices of functions in the kernel of L, and you take all the Darboux transforms, all the potentials thus obtained, in fact, have this remarkable property that they are the rational solutions of the Korteweg-de-Vries equations. And there's a whole subject in mathematics called soliton theory, and Jürgen Moser and people started all this, and I don't understand a word of it, but it shows that the Darboux transform is quite significant at this moment, quite fashionable in mathematical circles. Darboux didn't actually know what he was doing. And that's, of course, the case for most of us. When you discover something, you actually don't know all its implications. We have to wait until 1923, 40-odd years later, two British mathematicians, Virchow and Chaundy, interpreted the Darboux transform. And they interpreted it this way. Given a potential V there, I'm going to define two first-order linear differential operators, P and Q, as defined there. And lo and behold, let's see what we get if we apply P, the composition of P and Q, to a test function psi. And if you remember what P and Q are, it's minus D plus or minus the potential, and you go through it very carefully. See, there are going to be four terms. First, we're taking the minus D, and we get the first two terms, and then the second. And I don't know how quick you are at this time of the evening on all this, but you see various terms cancel, with the second term there in the second row. You've got a derivative of a product, and you do all this, and it cancels one of the others, and then you get down to the third row, and you get that, but now you differentiate the logarithmic derivative, and that cancels out the second term with that parenthesis, and lo and behold, you come down to the fourth line. But what on earth is phi double prime over phi? Well, phi was in the kernel of L, and what was L? Minus d squared plus v. So phi double prime over phi is another name for v. So PQ is a factorization of L. Okay? You can guess the sequel. Let's see what Q times operate on a test function with P and then Q, and you go through, you get just a change of sign of two of the terms. Where we got cancellation before, you now have reinforcement. So you go through the algebra, and you get in the square bracket on the fourth line, minus v plus twice the logarithmic derivative squared. That, of course, is the Darboux transform. So what Darboux didn't know that he was doing was, in fact, factoring a second-order linear differential operator into the product of two first-order operators and reversing their order. And of course, that preserves the eigenvalues and changes the eigenfunctions in a simple way, as you would guess, and anyone who's ever taught QR and LR, of course, knows that very well. Okay, end of section one of my talk. So these were, the idea of reversing factors was in that world. Two other players, the distinguished physicist Infeld and his student Tommy Howell, who offered me my first job at the University of British Columbia, But Hull was Infeld's student at Toronto, and they produced something called the factorization method. I don't think they knew anything about the Darwin transform or Birchnell and Chaudhry stuff. This was completely independent, and what they were trying to do was to reduce the solution, finding the eigenfunctions of most of the equations that come up in mathematical physics to table lookup. I showed you the title page because I want to draw your attention to the date, January 1951, well before Rutishauser's LR algorithm of 57. And so, you probably, it's too small to read the type, but this was their goal, and I'm not going to drag you through all the details of that, but I want to show you the table of contents. So remember, Infeld said, I've got a mechanism for finding the eigenfunctions of any of the equations of mathematical physics. I've just taken a type of type A, type B, type C, type D. But, well, let me read a few of those in case I can barely read them myself. But we've got real scalar meson fields and nucleons and many component real theory, a harmonic oscillator. So they really covered the ground with a uniform theory. And why I'm going to show it to you, because any of you who have taught or learnt the QR algorithm with shifts, you're going to recognize the formalism. So here was their program, in essence. You start with typical PDE from physics, you do separation of variables, you apply the boundary conditions to the time, and you get usually a ordinary differential equation in space, but with a parameter. So you exchange one PDE for an infinite sequence of ODEs with a parameter I'm calling M. And of course, each of these solutions gives you a basis for a function space. And so for each M, you're going to have, these are nice, you're going to have a sequence of distinct eigenvalues, lambda 0 onwards, and with their eigenfunctions, which of course will be dependent upon which eigenvalue, and of course on M. And in what follows, the functions are going to be functions of X, and I'm suppressing it. All right, so the big idea of Infeld was the following. They say an ODE can be factored if, and all their cases satisfy this, so you've got to be able to represent the ODE in two ways. So if the ODE is equivalent, if it can be written in the two forms I'm giving, on the top two lines there, but you've got to see what HM is. H is a first order differential operator, just as we had before. I was calling it 5 prime over 5, 4, but here there's going to be some function kxm plus or minus the derivative, and when we do this, there, in some sense, we get a shift. The eigenvalues are going to change. So, it so happens that most of the equation of mathematical physics are factored, can be factored in this form. Now, if you subtract those top two lines and rearrange, what you find is this relationship. What I really want you to do is to think of this as being lower triangular matrices, and this being upper, minus being upper, plus being lower. So we have this, but of course these are differential operators, and so what these two are equivalent to is the fact that the operators at level m plus 1 are related to the operators at level m by this relation, but with a little offset. L is independent of x and lambda. they're usually fairly simple functions. The authors, Infeld and Hull, note this in passing, but they don't say anything more. Why? Well, what I'm slightly sloughing over is the authors weren't trying to find eigenvalues. They were actually trying to show how you could get eigenfunctions. So they were dealing with equations of mathematical physics. What their idea was that once you had got your ODEs, you could then, and they belong to certain types, they'd done all the factorizations. And so there was a very simple mechanism for finding the eigenfunctions which any engineer or physicist could use. I actually think we haven't heard much about this because I think the development of digital computers really made all this unnecessary. Okay, so my message is that if anyone in that vicinity had heard the word discretize, well, Tommy Hull was a numerical analyst. He was a professor of numerical analysis at Toronto and at the University of British Columbia. If they had simply used backward differences for that and forward differences for that, you have the LR algorithm on a tridiagonal. Because, of course, the second order minus d squared is the familiar tridiagonal matrix. But they didn't do it. I don't know why. Well, I do know why. They weren't trying to find eigenvalues. So there's a whole... Oh, I'll give you one example. So this is the standard form of one of the differential equations for the spherical harmonics. There's the parameter m. Well, it's not in Schrodinger form. So this is a standard change of variables with, from p to y. And here's the differential equation. The ODE in standard form. And so the trick is to take this r function and find the little k functions, which were on the previous slides, and here they are. Here, the two levels of factorization, I'm giving you a concrete example of the formalism before. So this is the clever factorization of the ODE, and here's your function L. So a simple function of L. That's L of M. Up there, M minus a half squared in this particular case, and the eigenvalues have been offset by a quarter to do this. And here's the level one step up. So you can factor it both ways, and when you work through the details, this is one instance of that formalism. And I'm giving you another brief glance from the table of contents of all the different factorizations. So this is what I did with gamma equal to a half, and then there are all these others, and it goes on and on and on. So the art was, you're given R, you find the K, and you find the L, and they did it for everything. So they have what they call a completely automatic mechanism for finding all the different eigenfunctions that you need. Okay, there's a whole theory, and in interest of time, and under the strict orders of Ilse and Margaret and everyone, I'm going to skip the theory. What you do is you get a lattice of eigenfunctions, L and M here. So for each M, here are the eigenvalue or the eigenfunctions belonging to the infinite set of eigenvalues for each M, and they're all very closely related, and you can move up and down this lattice, and the beautiful thing is that the eigenfunctions along the diagonal can be found by quadratures. I skipped all that, the theory. Why? Well, it's not really needed to find purpose, which was I was trying to show antecedents of the LR algorithm in the PDE community, so you don't need to worry about the theory. And so I say again, in this instance, if they just discretize all the functions in sight, use backward differences for the derivatives, and then one of the theorems is that the H plus and the H minus are adjoints. So if one is lower by a diagonal, then the H plus will be upper diagonal, and this is the sort of form. The this is of course just a diagonal, a change to the diagonal, and so we have, in essence, the LR algorithm on a tridiagonal in 1951. And here we have a sort of form with shifts, which of course Darboux didn't think about. That was LR without shifts. And in the positive negative case, you can do, we have the Kolesky LR. It was all there if only anyone had ever heard the word discretize, but they hadn't. So, I'll stop.
Thank you, Beresford. Well, he's actually given us plenty of time for questions. Are there any questions for Beresford? Either on tonight's or last night's talk? Margaret.
So remind us of Francis.
I'll tell the story.
Yes, please.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm not sure everybody knows.
No, okay, some of you may not know it. So, a mysterious man called J.G.F. Francis, who was never heard of afterwards, authored the papers which presented the QR algorithm, which is now ubiquitous. And people kept asking old people like me, you know, who was Francis? Did you know him? Blah, blah, blah. Why? Where is he a professor? And so on. And G. Gollum and Frank Ulig tracked him down in England. He's retired now. But he was completely unaware of his fame in the numerical analysis community. He'd been a sort of student. I don't think he had any degrees. He went up to Cambridge. He went to Harrow School, the same one that Winston Churchill went to. And he had a physics master at the school called Christopher Strachey. Some of you will recognize that name. A very famous family, the Stracheys. And he went into the army, as we all had to do in those days, and rather shattered, he went to Korea, he came back, he went up to Cambridge to read mathematics, hated it, dropped out after a year, went back to London, got a job in the fledgling computer affairs. Came to the notice of Lord XYZ, I can't remember now, and he got a job really associated with the University of London, one of the colleges, in the computing center, and he kept in touch with his physics master at Harrow School, Christopher Strachey, who became the first professor of computing at Oxford University, but he was just a physics teacher. And Strachey took Francis, who was a dropout from Cambridge, under his wing, and one day, Rutishauser's LR, a reprint of Rutishauser's LR thing, appeared on Francis's desk, and Francis suggested that, Christopher Strachey suggested that he should perhaps work on this and maybe find a stable, backward stable variant. Francis must have been pretty bright, but he came up with the idea of doing Gram-Schmidt, what we say QR now, instead of LR, and developed it all with a bit of help from Strachey and not much and a bit of help from Jim Wilkinson, but he really did most of it himself. And then he got tired of computation. He went on and got various other jobs in the computer industry, did a bit of artificial intelligence, a bit of work on operating systems, got a job up in Manchester. But he submitted the papers, they were accepted, and he, in the computer journal, I don't think he gave them any attention after that, was completely unaware of the reception of his algorithm, and went on, had a, not quite sure of all his career, he worked in various things in the computer industry, retired, his wife's died a few years ago, he's retired to Sussex, and when Gene Golub and Frank Udick discovered him about 2 years ago now, he was completely oblivious of the fame of the QR algorithm. It's an amazing story.
We might add that he didn't have a degree, but he's now actually taking one through,
for the, through the Open University. Yeah.
Thank you again, very much.